It's time now for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, who joins us here in the studio for the first look back at history of the brand new year. Happy New Year. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. We haven't talked since last year.
I know.
It's been
so long.
I know.
It was
but really, I mean, it is kind of historic that we started this goofy experiment about 2 years ago.
Yes.
And yet history keeps just galloping ahead.
Yeah.
And just when we think we can run out of history, there's just more of it lapping at the door.
There's an XKCD comic.
At the shore, that, I guess. They're lapping
yes.
at the door. We're knocking
lapping
at the door.
Lapping at the door is what happened when Florence hit last earlier this fall.
That's right.
There's an XKCD comic that's fairly recent where it was a historian presenting at a press conference like, oh, we had a really good 2018. We've covered the history of January of 1741, March 3rd, 1642, and most of the summer of 1225. The downside is that we've had another year of history that's happened in the meantime, so we're actually falling a little bit behind.
Yeah, I think there was a rule like at one point some group would say, all right, you can't talk about anything in the last 10 years. It has to be in the last 50 years.
Yes.
And I thought, well, now that's kind of stretches it, especially with the history going on that we are sometimes just racing to connect with this week. But, you know, with New Year's Eve, of course, we had all kind of things happening, including one kind of bizarre incident in Raleigh with the person that got shot from a bullet.
People fire their guns off in the air on New Year's Eve,
yes.
Which, by the way, coming from Michigan, which is a very gun-friendly state,
I
never heard of that until... Maybe I was just running in the wrong circles. I don't know. But not until I came down to North Carolina did I ever hear about that as a thing. Although, in fairness, I also had never heard about the whole... What's the Hoppin' John and Black Eyed Peas that eat on New Year's Day for luck? I hadn't heard of that either until I came down to North Carolina.
Oh,
so y'all
God.
Have all kinds of traditions that are just here.
That Black Eyed Pea thing is a great, you know, and I used to eat
it's
Black Eyed Peas.
A good meal to start the year anyway.
But
yeah.
You know, that it goes back over 5,000 years that Black Eyed Peas have been cultivated, brought over from West Africa on slave ships, and then cultivated here in the South. When Sherman marched through the South in the Civil War, burned many of the crops, but not that. And that was a sustenance crop for many people.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really, and it's the way to prepare them, you actually have to boil them for a while, and then you actually rinse them because there's some ingredient that will make your stomach upset, and then recook them with some water and a little olive oil. This is a cooking show.
This is why I love you coming in, because it just make an offhand reference to black eyed peas. Like, here's the history of black eyed peas, and then here's the recipe for making black eyed peas.
More than you wanted to know.
Coming up next, we've got music from.
And you know, it's like you're right. It's like the Ginsu knife commercials. There's always,
but wait, there's more.
Okay. January 1st, there's some great things that happen, and it's not just because it's New Year's Day and the Rose Bowl parade and the parades that always seem to look at. Except this year, there was one that caught on fire. And
yeah,
I don't know,
well, let's talk about the history of New Year's Day, because this is this is a fascinating holiday anyway.
Well, it's because they can you imagine there was a time when New Year's Day, of course, wasn't celebrated on New Year's,
right?
And in fact, in England, it wasn't until late in the 18th century that they switched the day. New Year's actually began March 25th, which was to correspond with the spring.
Which actually makes more sense.
It does.
Like, the beginning of spring is the beginning of the new year.
Right.
Like, that's the date that makes sense for New Year's Day.
But people got the calendars all mixed up. Then.
Right,
and then it was
right.
like, okay, what's really happening? And so they had to finally say, no, New Year's Day is January 1st, which changed everything. But it goes back to Roman times when Janarius was a month that was proposed by the Romans in honor of this god Janus, and they started celebrating it. So it's kind of interesting to see how this has developed.
Right. Well, I think about January as the month that honors Janus, and I never thought about that as the connection with New Year's, but Janus is the god with two faces, and one looks to the left and one looks to the right. So one looks to the past and one looks to the future. So that's
exactly
the god
do.
Of the new year.
That's right.
I never thought about that, but
You know, maybe that's a good way to look at the New Year's resolutions is also to look at the past year and say, look how much you really have accomplished.
Yep.
I mean, there are certain things that you face that you didn't know about and certain plans. But then there was a lot of other things that were like, wow, that was a surprise. Gee, I'm so glad that happened. Yeah. Didn't know it. And that's a nice thing to remember when we look ahead to the new year.
Did that happen in 2018? That feels like it was 14 years ago.
Well, I remember when.
Way back in July.
Yeah, that was last year. Well, there are some things that happened on January 1st. Well,
yes.
Actually, we're getting stuck on New Year's Eve, but I'll tell you, January 1st, Ellis Island opens in 1802, which
92.
Is 1892, I'm sorry. And the gateway for over 12 million immigrants to the U.S. who all come streaming into the New York Harbor.
Yep.
And but I did not know that the building burned where so many of the immigration records were on Ellis Island.
Mm.
And they lost all these records going back to 1855. And then they rebuilt a building after that. But, I mean, that's pretty significant.
Interesting.
Another thing that happened in 1863 is when the Emancipation Proclamation took effect. It had actually been issued the previous September, but it actually took effect January 1st, 1863.
Yep.
Very significant and very important, freeing slaves. Though this was a little bit of controversy, but it just kind of kept rolling forward, leading eventually in 1865 to the 13th Amendment, which eliminated slavery forever.
Because the Emancipation Proclamation covered some slaves in part of the U.S., but not the entire country. It's not until the 13th Amendment,
But, you know, one of the things that's really encouraging is when I was looking back at colonial records, and I mean colonial newspapers from the 18th century that even Colonial Williamsburg has, and it's fascinating how much that you will find notices that are being put up by people saying, gee, people are escaping. This person has run away or whatever that had been enslaved.
Right.
And it's encouraging because this notion that people were just embracing slavery as a nice thing was not true.
Mm-hmm.
And when people had a chance, they would, as any of us would, escape a terrible human evil that's only kept in place by guns, dogs, laws, and chains. So when people could, they did. And it's great to say we have the record showing that that was happening.
Yep.
And an important thing. Another thing that happens is 1818 is when Mary Shelley's famous novel is published, Frankenstein. That was based on some unusual weather that we talked about before.
We talked about the weather.
Year without
thing,
a summer, climate change. And so she was challenged, well, why, you know, they're vacationing and the weather is really terrible. Well, why don't you write something?
So write a novel instead.
Yes. Isn't that
just for every
thing?
Single kid who's been taken on a family vacation for a week and then it just rains the entire time and you're shut up in the house.
That's right.
And it seems bad at the time, but that happened to Mary Shelley.
That's right.
And she published Frankenstein. What did you do?
Exactly. That's right. It's a great thing for, you know, you're bored on January 1st. Oh, yeah. Well, I bet. Let's see if you can best Mary Shelley. I think that's a good thing.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, let's see. Another thing that happened. Now, this is kind of interesting. Let's kind of move up a day or two and to Thursday, January 3rd.
All right.
And
this day in history.
This day in history. And there's a couple of things. One, you know, we always think of the Beatles, and we always think of the Ed Sullivan Show, the first appearance. Actually, not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually January 3rd, 1964, that Jack Parr on The Tonight Show airs a film clip of the Beatles singing She Loves You, the song, and then they make their appearance several months later on The Ed Sullivan Show as a result, which is kind of cool. But on this same date, now this is what's interesting, just 6 years later, January 3rd, 1970, the Beatles record their last song together, I Me Mine. I mean, 6 years. I mean, that's kind of an amazing
thing. They did a lot in those 6 years.
Yeah, kind of incredible. When you think that stuff is still around and we're all still humming those tunes.
It was a big transformation of the Beatles from 1964 to 1970 and what they went through personally and how their music evolved from 64 to 70, right? You think about, like, She Loves You, and then just a few years later, they're releasing Sgt. Pepper, and, like, what a big difference
it
is.
Yes, that's quite a decade right in there. And I'm totally misspeaking today. I don't think many people hum these tunes. I was saying they hum the tunes. Like, no, have anybody been humming?
I think they hum the tunes.
They sing the tunes, maybe.
Well, what is like?
Let it be, let it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you do that, yeah. But you also like if you like, let it be, Like at a certain point, like it becomes humming.
Now Rob Stutzer here. He'd be saying, yes, I know the words. Hold on, don't say that.
When I times. Some trouble, someone has the key. Yeah.
Well, you all know the words out there. Go ahead, come on, sing along.
People on the radio just shaking their heads in dismay.
Right.
I know the lyrics, people.
Okay, maybe. Now, last week I think we talked about Amelia Earhart being really interested. She takes a flight in a plane, 1920, and suddenly she gets the idea, this is what I want to do. Well, January 3rd, 1921 is when she begins taking flying lessons.
Awesome.
Isn't that cool? So, you know, that's another one. I wonder if
that
was
a little
New Year's
time
resolution.
Lag. Yeah, it had to have been. Like the time lag between I take a flight, and then I go immediately into the office. Like, I want to sign up for flying lessons right
that's
now.
Right.
It's like we got an opening in a week and a half. When can you be there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things that are kind of fun to look at and go, oh, that's really a cool part of history. Now, there is something that's also on January 6th that we should note, and if we didn't, then another group of musician people would be saying, why didn't you mention this? 1924, January 6th, Earl Scuggs is born near Shelby.
Nice.
And he's a renowned bluegrass banjo musician, and of course, not only because of his ability to play the banjo, but the musicianship and the kind of music he fostered. But now here's something I did not know. If you know the Beverly Hillbillies, helped to compose that song. Wait, we're getting a lot of music into this segment, aren't we?
Yeah.
Music, cooking, it's really getting entertaining. We're just broadening the
I'm
the
not
scope.
Sure that was the Beverly Hillbillies song that you just hummed
Isn't it? What is it?
I'm going to listen to my story about a man named Jed.
Thank
that
you.
One, yeah.
Oh, yeah, see, people are doing that same thing. No, that wasn't. That's right, folks. This is just a test. Thank you. That was great, Aaron. And you can pick up Aaron's new album coming out. Classic hits. Do you recognize them?
Yeah.
Hum along with this.
Yes, hum along with it. Yeah.
But that's kind of fun. Also, now here is something. It's also on this same day, January 6th, National Shortbread Day. And I bring this up only because my first attempts at cooking were to try to make shortbread, and it was a fiasco. And I tried it like a dozen times.
You should have made black-eyed peas instead. You're really good at that.
Well, no, but I was using, you know, the internet has been just a boon to anybody who doesn't cook, and I certainly have been horrific at it. But so when I heard there was a day, I thought, well, I'm not sure I'm going to try that again. I'm sure there are, and there's people.
Well, what happened when you tried to make shortbread the first time?
Oh, it was awful. It was just terrible. It was. I followed whatever the recipe, and finally I was convinced it must be the recipe because everything I did, it just came out like cardboard. It was terrible. And I'd made it like a dozen times. A dozen times tasting cardboard, you almost never want to taste that again.
Yeah. That's when you find another webpage that has another slightly different recipe.
Yes, but this is before webpages.
Oh,
this is
okay.
Before, this is, that's how long ago.
Gotcha. All right, all right.
That's right.
Back in July.
Oh, now here's one, and I think we've talked about this one. January 6th, 1969 is when Jimmy Carter, who becomes a future U.S. president, he recalls seeing a UFO. Now, isn't that a...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's nothing more to be said
Honest, like, it was 1969. I'd be surprised if he hadn't seen a UFO.
That's right. Okay, and what were you growing in those fields, Mr. Carter?
peanuts, et cetera.
Yeah. Yes. let's see. Let's go back to the beginning, too, when we said about the person firing the gun. Terrible thing. Don't fire guns up because the bullets, if they're being fired, are going to come down just like apparently that young woman. Well, January 4th, 1847, Samuel Colt makes his first sale to the U.S. government. I'm sure he was saying, do not fire these guns up into the air because the bullets will come down.
He was probably just happy to get the sale, to be honest.
Well, that could very well be, yeah. But
I'm going to trust you not to fire the guns up into the air because that would be a waste of bullets. Thank you very much for signing your name on the dotted line.
Thank you.
I'll take my money and go.
That's right. All right, now here is another thing. I don't know, music, food, unusual facts. January 4th, 1936 is when the pop music bestseller chart Billboard first makes its debut, which is something at least noteworthy.
I'm going to go back to, I was wondering about this because we know so much about popular music in the second half of the 20th century.
Yes.
Like once rock and roll becomes a big thing and R&B and radio stations begin playing. But prior to 1954 or so, a lot of the really popular music of the first half of the 20th century is forgotten today.
Yes.
I would be interested in going back to 1936 and seeing, okay, what were the top 10 songs of the day?
Well, in some of those, I think it was, which was the, one of the new the songs that came out that became a popular dance step has now become in the public domain.
Yes.
And when those laws were changed to extend the rights to the heirs of writers and composers, well, that meant that it's been a longer delay getting music into the public domain. In fact, it took a while for the Happy Birthday song to finally make it into the public domain.
Which it finally did.
It finally did.
Yep.
But that's a pretty significant milestone. And that may have, and so some of those recordings, thank goodness, that have been preserved by the Library of Congress and are making their way back in, we are bringing back again. And of course, now we have digital technology, can clean it up so you can actually hear some of these great people.
Well, according to the internet, which never lies,
the internet.
In 1936, Billboard introduced the first ever pop music chart with the rankings. The first number one was big band violinist Joe Venuti.
Of course.
According to the internet.
We were having an argument about this, were we?
Yes.
No. This, of course, depended on the people actually having both radios and or, you know, some kind of device where they could play the records on.
Yeah.
Not either of which was in great supply. So, so what was it? Were there other ones, or was that the top
this
one?
This is just what it just said. What
so
the
you mean that's it?
Was.
There
was
yeah, the number one. Maybe that was the only one.
Maybe that was it. Like there was only there's only one
now
song
here's
out.
Our, I can see
Joe Venuti got his song in this week, and
you'd be
he's
playing
got it.
Now let's hear that one hit wonder one more time.
Yes,
Joe Venuti.
Because it's all we got. All right, we got Scott Washington here in the studio with History Matters. We got time for one more. What do you got?
Okay, well this is an important one. 1921 January 5th, Lillian Exum Clement took her seat in the North Carolina House of Representatives, becoming the first woman in the South to hold legislative office. And she was nominated, this is the cool thing, as a Democratic candidate 2 months before the 19th Amendment granted her and other women the right to vote, and she beat two male opponents in the primary by a wide margin. I think that's great, especially today when we see the House of Representatives and the Senate reconvening in Washington, and we have a slew of new women taking office as representatives, and that's an important milestone.
There you go. And that is History Matters for this week. Scott Washington, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.